Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and it's going to be a fun one. I got with me Cannon Carr, and he is with Corner Cap Investment Counsel. Welcome, Cannon.
Thanks, Lee. Glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit about Corner Cap. How are you serving folks?
Well, so Corner Cap is an investment advisor, so we help clients, whether they're private families or smaller foundations and endowments, reach their long-term goals, kind of over 10, 20, 30-year period, and even across generations.
So now, their long-term wealth goals?
From an investment standpoint, yeah.
So you're kind of the quarterback of their investment team?
That's right.
And how'd you get into this line of work?
Well, so I used to be an analyst on Wall Street, which maybe can be another segment because that's fascinating in its own right. But I was an analyst on Wall Street, loved being up in the booth commentating. But at some point, you know, it's more fun being on the field playing the game. And I knew the founders of this firm. They started the firm 25 years ago, 30 years ago. They were the managers of R.J. Reynolds' pension plan, one of the bigger pension plans at the time. So I'd been a client, my family and I'd been a client of them for a while. I got to know the founders and joined the firm a little over 10 years ago as the chief investment officer.
So as an investment officer, are you dealing with clients individually or you're overseeing the investment of the entire firm?
More overseeing the investments of the entire firm, but I do get pulled into specific client meetings and help strategize where I can.
And then tell me about some of those meetings. How do you strategize for a client?
Well, so some clients will, if they're a foundation or an endowment, they'll be thinking, all right, so you know we've got fiduciary responsibilities over these investments that we own, and we're trying to either build a building or achieve a mission or serve a certain type of client through either city services or church services or whatnot. So they'll be looking over a 15 or 20-year period. So the question is, what investments do you use to get them to that point? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in the markets. And, you know, how do you manage spending in the near term? And if you're spending too much, how do you ratchet that down? And so it's helping get that balance.
Are there ever times when there's not uncertainty in the markets?
That's one of my favorite questions. Everybody always says this time is just so uncertain. And in reality, every time is uncertain. It's just how confident are you?
All right. They don't ring a bell when it hits the bottom.
You usually don't get advance notice. You have to look in the rearview mirror to figure out you're at the bottom
and then,
or the top.
And so when you're dealing with it from the investment kind of viewpoint, you're probably tending to always look down the road, right? You're looking far out and we'll weather the storm.
Yes.
You're kind of the voice of reason.
Well, we try to be the voice of reason, but at the same time, there'll be near-term obligations that clients will have. Mm-hmm. And so we will help them think about that as well, right? So because if you're in stocks, for example, I mean, those can go up or down. I like to say the equity markets are not your friend, right? I mean, they're going to get you to the long term, but in the short term, they may hurt a lot. So how do you manage that kind of volatility? There are ways to do that with different types of investments as well. So you're balancing near-term obligations with long-term goals. And so we're always looking near-term and long-term. But you're right. I mean, to get it right, you have to be looking very long-term.
And then does the psychology work the same when you're dealing with kind of these larger entities rather than individuals? Like, can they handle like a 20% drop?
It's
easier.
It's very interesting. I find individuals and institutions both have the same types of fears. We're all human at the end of the day, and when you know if we lose 20% in the markets, that hurts, and we get nervous, right? And we want behaviorally, people want to do something to protect the loss, right? And if things are going really well, people tend to get a little too excited and kind of pursue opportunities that long term may not make the most sense. So it's very interesting because families and private individuals have those same emotions that larger institutions would have. You would think that larger institutions would be brave and logical. And they try to be, but it's they succumb to the short-term fears just like everybody else does.
Now, do the institutions, are you typically dealing with a committee, or is it one person that makes the call?
Institutions will be usually a committee. So when we're dealing with private families, it tends to be more one or two people. And sometimes it'll be intergenerational. And, you know, when they're looking to beyond just their own lives but to the next generation, you know, we'll have family members involved. But on the institution side, it does tend to be committees. And what's interesting is over time, those committees will change who's involved, right? There'll be turnover on the committee. So you have to have a written document, you know, for a 5 or 10 year period, because eventually there's turnover and you got new people and they think, why would we have done that?
You know, right. I told you not to invest in that.
That didn't make sense. Why did we do that? Well, we have to write that down.
And then I always ask all the wealth management people, what portion of your portfolios are in cryptocurrency?
0%.
That's been the universal answer.
It is. And you know, it's interesting. I mean, bubbles come and go, and we wrote a detailed kind of a white paper analysis on it at the beginning of the year that we published. You can find it on our website. Digital currencies, just as an aside, I mean, those, they are revolutionary, and they will play a role.
So you believe in blockchain?
Blockchain, definitely.
You may not believe in a specific cryptocurrency at this point.
That's right. I mean, so digital currencies as a digital cash peer-to-peer system has a long way to go. But I do think it will work. We just don't know what the economic model is yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we think of currencies in general, you know, you want something that's trusted, you want something that's stable, something that's scalable, something that's dependable. You know, think the U.S. dollar, think the euro, think the Japanese yen. Digital currencies aren't there yet to really support real transactions. And at this point, I think the market has started to learn that, right? I mean, you're seeing enough volatility and it doesn't hold value as well. So I'm not getting near as many questions about digital currencies as I did, you know, last
when
January,
it was 20
last December, right?
Right.
You know, and people were real excited at 20. They're less excited at
6,000. Why? You should like it even more at 6,000. If you liked it at 20, this should be a no-brainer now, right?
Exactly. And it's just a good example of how emotions get things backwards on that.
So now, when you're dealing with families rather than institutions, and it a lot of times they have their own business, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's built the finance. That's the machine that's creating the wealth. Do you help in the succession planning and things like that?
For families, well, for families, when you say succession planning, you mean are you talking about
like say you have a,
like
family,
if they have a family
business?
We don't get as much into that. You know, we can steer them to someone who can help them with that. Our expertise is not so much helping on the business side for them to, you know, choose who's the next generation to run that business. We do, as you can imagine, get all kinds of questions. But there we would look to, you know, some of the trusted advisors we partner with, you know, to kind of steer them, a client, to the best advice there.
Mm-hmm. So your CornerCap is primarily just the wealth portion of it.
So we're specifically the investment portion of it. And so our roots and heritage is in making investments in different types of investment strategies. But we've expanded, you know, as our clients grow and as our business grows, we've expanded into the wealth management business. So we do get into tax strategies and helping clients understand, you know, how do you spend for the today? How do you save for the future? You know, how do you, you know, how do you plan charitable giving? How do you get your children involved so that they're proper stewards of capital down the road? So all those things have pulled us into that market. And so that's so now our team is well versed at that as well. But you know, if you needed an estate planner or something like that, I mean, we would steer a client to an estate attorney for that, because we don't do that business.
But for the individual, so you would just be one of the advisors that they have.
Yeah, we would be. We like to be the quarterback of all the investments. Mm-hmm.
So you're separating wealth and investment.
Yes, but those are starting to blur, right? Mm-hmm. So wealth management now gets into more of the planning parts of. Planning for the future outside of just investments. Investments are a tool to get you to create wealth so that you can manage that wealth later, right?
Right.
So we are in the wealth management business, but we're not, we're not estate attorneys, and we don't have estate attorneys on staff there.
Right, but investments, this is like stocks and bonds and things like that.
That's right.
Not their business.
Not their business.
Or their house, or what insurance they should buy and things like that that might impact their wealth.
We can give advice on that, but we don't sell insurance, so we're not we're not steering our client to that product. But we can put it in the context of the wealth plan,
right? Because you have to look at it holistically, right? If
That's
you're
right.
truly serving them, you have to know where all the landmines are.
That's right. That's right. So, and here, you know, again, as chief investment officer, I'm more on the investment side.
Right.
So, we have some of our portfolio managers, our wealth strategists, who will basically take the tools that my team builds. And use those to build a portfolio to achieve a 10, 20 year, 30 year target, and then within that context, they'll provide the wealth management advice in terms of, you know, doing cash flow projections and figuring out, you know, what's the spending policy, should insurance play a role here? And many of our clients actually don't need insurance. People will overpay for insurance.
Really?
And get more than they need. I mean, you want to be able to have, you need enough assets to support a certain lifestyle. And so insurance is very important to get to that point. But, you know, once, you know, if you do have $5 or $10 million and lucky enough to have that, you know, people can overpay for insurance. I mean, you can self-insure in many respects. But again, that's, you know, our team gives advice in that way.
But just then, as an advisor, not as, hey, buy this.
That's right. We don't tell them specifically what to buy.
Just you're kind of generally saying this is what are some things to think about.
That's right. That's right.
Now, for you and your, you're managing mutual funds. That's your kind of day-to-day?
We do. We have some small mutual funds that we manage, but we mainly do what's called separately managed accounts. So those are accounts that are specifically customized to a client and their needs.
So my own mutual fund you're making for me?
If you want to look at it that way, right? I mean, it wouldn't be a tradable mutual fund in one entity. And, the, you know, what a mutual fund does is gives you access to a broad strategy.
Right.
And you can do it in a smaller amount. And so, you know, we do have mutual funds that we own mainly because we got them 20 years ago, and it's very expensive to start a mutual fund company now. It's very expensive to market a mutual fund company, and we're not really actively marketing our mutual funds. We manage them, and we use them largely for internally for our clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now, for like, if you're working with my family or my institution, you're choosing individual stocks?
That's right.
Not moving me to mutual funds, typically?
No, well, we will.
Or it's a combination?
If you looked at our portfolio, and there are different ways to do it, you know, there's, I would say, you know, probably a third, maybe a quarter of your portfolio, we will use other funds, usually exchange-traded funds. They're cheaper. Mm-hmm. Mutual funds do tend to be more expensive. But if you can get a specialty asset class or where you can justify the cost, we will add a mutual fund. But for 75% of your portfolio with us, it is individual securities. We're mm-hmm. able to buy and sell stocks, and we're able to manage bond ladder funds and those things that are much more customized to you.
And then what's the minimum that your clients have in order to work with you guys?
Well, so we can actually, you know, when you look at our core product, we tend to have about a $3 million minimum. But we can serve clients in the $1 to $2 million range, and we're actually, you know, and robo investing often comes up as a topic, and I'm happy to talk about that. You know, there are low cost ways of providing great investment service and products to, you know, younger clients that are coming into younger people that are coming into the market that don't have that much today, but are in accumulation mode and looking to get to the future. And, you know, that kind of product needs to be priced appropriately. You know, you're not getting the full wealth management advice that we would give for a full client at $3 million or above. So we're starting to explore how that market would look mm-hmm. as well. That would be a new product for us, but it's one that resonates with the technology and platform that we have.
And then technology is important to your firm.
Very important to the firm.
And then how are you leveraging it? And you're doing something kind of unique, right?
Well, we are. So, you know, when you look at our budget, most of our budget is spent on people, but the next highest part of the budget is technology for us. Mm-hmm. And technology, you know, is changing the investment industry, not rapidly yet, but you're starting to see signs of it changing rapidly. I mean, technology now is bringing costs down of investment products. You know, it has led to the passive investing wave. You know, so passive investments have been growing a lot in the last couple of years. Happy to talk about that if we want to get into details there. But technology is a way of being more efficient and being more cost effective. But it, you know, people are worried in the investment industry that will disrupt, right? So robo investing, people are worried investing platforms will replace the advisor.
Right, they'll be smarter than the advisor.
They'll be smarter than the advisor. They won't be emotional. They'll be consistent and a lot cheaper. So, you know, I think what we're learning is that technology and robo-investing can play a role as a product, but there's already enough studies coming out where people, at the end of the day, do trust an advisor, and it helps them to understand, you know, their lives better. They like to interact with a human, and I think a human can use those tools of robo-investing to better serve a client, but in a lower-cost way. But how we're using technology is basically in three areas. So one is in our research platform, and we just won a technology award from the Technology Association of Georgia, which we're excited about. And you don't usually hear an investment advisor win something from
tech,
in the tech world. But what we're doing, you know, we're not trying to be bleeding edge on big data, but we do want to be a thought leader and certainly current in what big data can provide. because our investment firm processes billions of records a week as we're figuring out the right investments to when to buy and sell. And so, you know, we have to be able to process that. And the platform, you know, that we currently have probably has another 4 or 5 years, but eventually we need to migrate to one that is, you know, order of magnitudes bigger, processes things 10 times faster at a tenth the cost. So we've been building that, and we've now got that platform in the past the R&D mode, and we just won an award for that. So we're very, very proud of that. So on the research side, technology is very important. On the service delivery side, it's very important. You know, we have an online portal for clients, and many investment advisors do now.
Sure.
But there's more and more online, and online is helping not replace the core person service, but it helps augment on the fringes.
Well, because the people want information when they want information.
They want information immediately.
Right. It's on demand, real time.
That's right. So, that's
table stakes now, right?
That's the price of entry, right? I mean, yeah, you have to be able to have that kind of thing. And then the third thing where technology is really helping us is in managing our employees. So we have two employees in particular who, for family reasons, had to move outside of Atlanta and far away. And 10 years ago, we would not have been able to keep them on the service team. But now we were able to integrate them with technology because they're seamlessly integrated with the team.
No matter where they live.
No matter where they live.
Right.
And so, you know, we all know about remote access and remote dialing in, not dialing in, but, you know, remote access to work now. And so working at home is more common. But to be fully integrated with the work stream of a team does require technology to make that happen. And so...
And secure.
It has to be secure. Security is very important. So technology is changing the investment world. I think it's making it more accessible to people. It should bring down costs. I'm not afraid that it's going to upend the model of the investment advisor, but I think investment advisors do have to be thoughtful how they integrate technology.
Now, are you seeing that technology, because of the data mining and the artificial intelligence and machine learning, are they able to, you know, pick better stocks? Is there research that shows that, you know, I just throw all this data into the machine and it's saying, look, invest on these 14 stocks.
Right. Artificial intelligence is, you know, hot word, right? And there's a lot going on that's very powerful there. The investment world has not figured out truly how to use it yet. And I think you have to be very careful. And, you know, there's some hedge funds that have tried to use artificial intelligence to pick better stocks. It hasn't really worked. So when you look at artificial intelligence,
Works in baseball sometimes.
It can work sometimes in baseball, but you know where, like you look at chess or the game Go. You know, those have been very good examples where even though it's just a ton of data, the sandbox is very well defined about the outcomes of a game. So the machine can learn rules to be predictive and be able to make decisions that are better than the human. And you're seeing it a little bit in the medical profession too. And I'm making up some stats here, but if doctors diagnose correctly 85% of the time, and the machine diagnoses better, you know, 88% of the time, and the two together get it better, diagnose it correctly 92% of the time, right?
Right.
That's a very powerful combination too. So AI in the medical world is starting to have a meaningful role. In the investment world, you have to be careful because, you know,
there's a lot of humans involved in companies and in decisions, and that means there's emotion, and that means they're not going to behave logically.
Bingo.
And that's going to disrupt these, I would think, unless the artificial intelligence can anticipate some of that psychology.
Right. And it hasn't yet, right? So the sandbox is very difficult to define.
Right. It's moving.
It's
like the chessboards in water.
Right.
It's not flat with little squares anymore.
It's like a three-dimensional, maybe four-dimensional chessboard with the rules changing a little bit each time or the inputs changing. And so it's hard for a machine to actually see a pattern that is replicable in the future.
Right.
And the tough thing is, you know, if you build an AI-based investment model, right when you finish it, it looks like it gets it right. But then you go through the coming year or two you're right, psychology, behavior, all these things make the market, certainly in the short term, very illogical.
Right. I mean, you see it every day. I mean, you see the stock market will plummet 20% and then it'll go back up, you know, within a few days.
Right.
So how could that make sense?
Well, and then, you know, there's that old saying that, Benjamin Graham said that in the short term, the market is a voting machine. In the long term, it's a weighing machine. And that always seems like a clunky analog. But it is true. In the short-term voting, it's almost a popularity contest. Who's popular today? Who's right. not? And who am I going to dump? And who am I going to take? But longer term, you know, investments do tend to be more predictable, not at the individual stock level, but at the broader asset class level.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way you have to manage the portfolios for that long-term general, predictability. And, you know, what the only real solution for us is, you know, we look for extremes in the short term. So when a market is being irrational, but we see a sign of an extreme that we can measure objectively in the market, we'll recognize that extreme. We'll make adjustments we think appropriate. The problem is, and the million-dollar question is, when does that extreme go back to normal, right?
Right.
And you never really know.
You
right?
don't have a bubble machine that tells you when you're in a bubble?
It'd be great. I mean, you know, we talked about digital currencies earlier. I mean, you know, that was certainly a bubble.
When that's happening, like you said, it was for a long time it was $5,000 or $6,000, and then it went slowly or fast up to $20,000.
Yeah.
And then are you ever at a point are your clients saying, hey, is it, this could be real? Am I
right.
missing out? Or that, like, this is real. Emotion is in play here. It's not to them in that moment. This is as real as anything else.
Very real. And you have to help people make good judgments, right?
Right. But at some point, are you kind of going, I don't know, you know, it looks to me like it's not real. But, I mean, how do you kind of do that?
Yeah, how do you keep your own doubts in check?
Right.
You have to work on it. And so we have an investment committee that has, key members of our firm to help make sure that we're staying consistent with our discipline. Because you have to have a strategy. You have to have a discipline. And I know, you know, all investment advisors will say that. But it's only worth it if you're really sticking to it, even when it hurts, right? So, our approach in terms of philosophy and strategy is to buy stocks that are on sale. So we're value investors. But go back, you know, we talked about digital currencies and
so then crypto's on sale.
Well, but not even at 6,000. Not even at 6,000. But let's use a real time example. So tech has been dominating this year again, right? Are we back in the dot-com bubble? But you know, you look at the FANG stocks, which are popular, and I know they were weak in October. But, you know, those stocks have a lot of momentum behind them, and they're great companies. Many of them are, you know, great companies. When do you sell them, though? Because right now, you know, some of them are trading, the average group that's winning right now in the market is trading about 121 times earnings. That is a gigantic.
So do you have a discipline when it comes to earnings like that?
Yes, we do. So we do.
50 or 70 or there's some number.
Well, it's
a range.
It's more of a range and a profile that
right.
we look at. So like I said, you know, we use technology to process tons of data. And when we process all that data, we're looking for, we're aggregating it in a way to get a fundamental profile of what's attractive, not for today, but for 5 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to make investments that way. So we'll be buying stocks that tend to look out of favor today, and we're selling or avoiding those stocks that are very popular today, right? So we're not buying
the
Amazon.
So you're contrarian.
Amazons. We're contrarian.
Right.
And if you talk to most people, they probably say they are contrarian, but you really find out if they're contrarian when it's not working in the short term. So to go to your point.
And what are they really buying and selling?
Right.
Not what they're saying they're buying and selling.
That's right. And so, like, if you look at a mutual fund, we talked about mutual funds earlier, if you have an advisor, if they have them articulate a discipline, but when it's not working and the going is tough, look at what they're buying and selling on the margin
right.
and see if they've, in fact, changed.
Right. Your character is what you're doing when no one's watching.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. That's
so
right.
It's the same principles apply
mm-hmm.
here, right?
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
So now you mentioned a little bit earlier this robo-investing to attract younger people that like apps and to get them in the habit of that's what you're trying to do is get them in the habit of saving, right? That's
getting the habit
kind
of saving and speaking to them on the language that they
right.
speak to. Yeah.
And then so when you're doing that, does the model for them, is it more conservative? Because they're the ones I would think that would be attracted to kind of some of these kind of speculative, more speculative investments.
Right. It would for us, it's going to be the same types of models that we use for clients anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, you know, what's your time horizon for investing? Are you really saving? Let's say you're 30 years old and you've got a good job and you're accumulating money for the future. All right, so you're saving for something 15, 20 years down the road or retirement. We'll use our standard models for that, right?
Right.
And then, but, you know, if they have near-term factors they need to weigh
like
in.
I'm going to get a house or I'm going to get married or something.
Get married or, you know, putting a kid in school. Then, you know, we weave that into the process as well. So we wouldn't be more aggressive or less aggressive in terms of what tools we use. It's the combination of tools we use
right.
to help them.
But they're just getting kind of a more automated kind of relationship with you guys rather than a human-to-human, lots of chatting and phone calls and...
Yeah, basically that. They would basically, it would be a lower price service.
Yeah, of course.
Because you're not getting our higher octane portfolio manager who's doing a lot of the
and Cannon's not picking up the phone and going, okay, Billy.
That's right. Yeah,
get off the ledge here.
That's right.
Right.
And that's fair too. That's the value proposition, right?
Right.
I mean, if you want an
online, that's not what the kid wants anyway. The kid
right.
wants to be able to just go in there and kind of
they'll get access to our research, right? I mean,
right.
they'll be able to read research papers and we'll actually have someone who's involved servicing them so that they can speak to a live person if they want. But yeah, that is the business. I mean, we're not using the more higher octane expensive resource to guide them yet. And if they want that, you know, they can move up to the
next level.
The next level.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I would think that this is a good client retention because you're serving family, so the kid's part of the family, so why don't
right.
you have some resources for them so they can at least stay connected with CornerCab?
That's right. And we keep costs down there. Technology, the delivery channel itself keeps costs down. We tend to use exchange-traded funds and passive products, which also keeps the cost down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's important. You know, the two biggest enemies to investing today are emotion and cost. Right. I mean, it's great to think you've picked the best manager and, you know, everybody always tries to do that and it's fun. But you can get into a dangerous game there. Right. I mean, the manager you thought was great is underperforming. So you get rid of them, move to the next guy and
right.
you end up, you know, doing the opposite of what you should do. At the end of the day, emotion and cost are the two biggest enemies to successful investing.
So now the bottom line is why are clients choosing CornerCab? What are you guys doing that says, you know what, I got to switch to CornerCab?
Well, so
because most of your people are with somebody else, right?
Yeah, they're often with somebody else. Or
right,
some
so they're
them,
making a change.
Yeah, they're making a change. Or some try to do it themselves, but mostly they're with someone else. For us, it is, you know, our, you know, when we think of ourselves, we say we are institutional investment management with boutique service.
Mm-hmm.
So our roots are in institutional investment management. And that's very important because it means we have a competitively proven process. It's been vetted by institutions who, our roots started with the R.J. Reynolds pension plan. That's how we built our investment methodology that led into our heavy use of data and how we aggregate it to fundamentals. We have now institutional clients, you know, across the country on both coasts who come in and do intensive due diligence in our business. And, you know, for you as a private client or for you as a smaller foundation endowment, that should give you comfort because they're going to ask questions and punch us, you know, harder than you probably will.
Right.
So that's point number one, the institutional investment roots and process. Second is the boutique service. We like to be small enough to matter and be relevant to you. And that's why, if our CEO, myself, you know, the portfolio manager, I mean, we're all just a phone call away. And someone on the service team can always be able to track us down that day. So we do try to give highly customized, highly personal service. So blending those two together, I think, is, it's hard to differentiate in this world as an investment advisor, but that's largely how we do it.
Now, do you, as a corporate culture, is part of your mission to invest in the community as well? Like, do you immerse yourself in the community to really get to know the places that you're kind of working at them?
We do try to immerse in the community. I think it's very important to give back to the community. And we do that actively because, it is part of our corporate brand and culture. We want to make the community a better place. So we want to be thought leaders where we can with the investment world and educate clients. And we want to be able to disseminate that education in a way that can make the world a better place. We try to encourage each employee to find in their communities where they can have an impact, and then we will support them on that. We also pick broader firm-wide, and they're not full across the firm initiatives, but there are several things that I work on personally that I just am excited about and love to spend time with it. And we want philanthropy very important to what we do as a firm.
And then how big is the presence here in Atlanta?
So we have, our total firm, we have about $1.3 billion under management. And we're in Atlanta and Charlotte with the two smaller service offices in Charleston and Orlando. We've got 22 employees.
And then what's the work that you're doing out of Atlanta?
Atlanta is where all our research is centered and where probably two-thirds of our service and portfolio management team are centered.
Mm-hmm. So the people that are working with the clients are here or they're...
They're here, but then we also have a service center in Charlotte. So I'd say two-thirds of our clients are in Georgia and North Carolina, and then the other third are throughout the nation.
And then how are you getting clients?
Largely referrals and word of mouth. You know, we don't do a lot of we don't do any advertising.
Sure.
You know, we and I think you know, I think we're investment people first and marketers probably third. So I think we can learn, frankly, how to be a better marketing organization. But it's mainly referrals from clients and
but you're creating clients. Thought leadership with part of that is to attract people to you so they see you're smart and you know what you're doing.
That's right.
But that's not an accident.
No, it's not an accident. So very deliberate, right? So we would hope. But it is more of a passive way, right? And, and so ultimately need to do better there. But we would hope if you went to our website and read the work that we do that you'd say, wow, yeah, that we want, you know, that's original, independent research, thought leadership. I mean, that's important to us. That's part of the brand we're trying to build.
And then the people you're trying to attract, are they the institutions, these family funds, things like that?
That's your typical client? Our typical clients, one that's – our sweet spot clients really probably the $3 to $20, $25 million range. We have some that are larger than that.
So that could be an individual, though.
Well, that is an individual. And then on the institutional side, similar range, kind of the $3 to maybe $15 million range on smaller endowments and foundations, but we will manage a strategy for much larger pension plans. I mean, we just want to...
Because it's the same activity, right?
Same activity, but a very specific strategy. So, like, you know, a pension plan will go out and say, you know, I'm not going to just hire one manager to manage all the investments. I'm going to hire, you know, one manager for a specific strategy. So they might have 20 different managers, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we, for example, yeah, so for one of the larger pension plans on the West Coast, you know, we manage a $60 million small cap strategy.
Just so that slice.
Just that sleeve of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, so you're looking for more business in that area?
Yeah, we are. So we look at business in the overall holistic wealth management side for private clients, smaller foundations and endowments, but then also specific strategies that we use for our private clients, but would just be one strategy.
But those are different markets. I mean, you have to have different marketing strategies for each one of those.
That's right. Very different.
Right.
So we do have a dedicated business development person for the
for each one of those.
Well, for the institutional market.
Right. Or do you go to like conferences and trade shows to attract those? Because
We do. We'll go to conferences or we'll set up one-on-one meetings and go meet those either through the consultant or the pension plan directly. And again, for our private client, that you know that's part of the due diligence process that makes us feel that
attractive
we have
to them. Right. Because if you're dealing with these people. You're able to handle their account.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
So now what's the most rewarding part for you now that you've kind of shifted in your career and have seen this industry from a couple different areas?
Yeah. I tell you, my favorite thing is the education part of what I do, both internally and externally. But not from the standpoint of like, you know, I or my firm knows all the answers. I mean, we're constantly learning.
Right.
And that's what's so fascinating.
And it's a moving target. No one can know it all.
Well, and the investment markets are just there's always something new to evaluate. Although the rules don't change that much, right? I mean, the fundamental investing rules don't change that.
You
much.
Haven't seen change there foundationally,
right? but a friend of mine one time, an analyst gave this great analogy. So if you walk into Central Park with your dog on a leash. And then you take the dog off the leash. The dog might run all over the park, right? But the person with the leash walks, you know, to the end
on
of the park,
path.
Straight path through, calls the dog, and the dog catches up and puts it back on the leash. So, you know, I view our role on the fundamental investing side as being that person walking through the park. But, you know, stocks, dogs, whatever, they'll run all over the
park.
So that's what's fun is being able to filter out the noise and find out what matters and help people work that into their wealth plan.
Right, and that takes to me a level of mental toughness to be able to not only to absorb when there's bad things happening and you got to deal with that, but also if great things are happening to evaluate if those are real things that are happening or they're just,
you know. You're exactly right.
I mean, I remember during the downturn in 2008, my sister lives in South Florida, and it was, you know, real estate, everybody was buying all this kind of stuff, and the South Florida real estate went through the roof. And she's like, my janitor just bought a block of condos on South Beach. And I'm like, oh, the word, this is not good, you know?
Right.
If the janitor is buying a block of condos,
right.
You know, how is this happening? Something is in the wind here.
Something, right. Something, it's not that easy, right?
Right.
I remember even back in the dot-com bubble, you know, I was flying into Rochester to meet with the management of a company, and the cab driver taking me to that meeting, found out I was in the stock world, and he was telling me all about his favorite tech investments. I mean, right. he knew so much about, you know, Nortel, Qualcomm.
Right.
And it was amazing. But the thing that's tough is it's never that simple. But the problem is people buy in when the excitement is
right.
exciting.
Which is probably the last.
Which is the wrong way
right.
to do it. Because,
you're
you know,
late. You're late. You missed.
You missed. Even, you know, and so, right. And then when it breaks down.
They're the first to sell. And then they double the badness.
That's right. You know? It's
the psychology of it is the most fascinating for me because it's slow and steady wins the race. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as sexy. There's no sexy answer. It's boring.
It's boring. You know? And clients our longstanding clients want it boring, right? They're right. like, keep it boring, right? This is good. You know, cocktail party talk or even radio interviews. I mean, you know, you haven't asked me yet what's our best idea, right? And I often hate that question because and I'm happy to walk you through it, but, you know, that's not as important as, you know, working the long-term plan and have it be very
right.
boring. But
yeah.
people love, you know, the exciting thing to talk
right,
about.
Right, the hot stock or yeah. the hot sector.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm less interested in that. I'm more interested in I want to socialize the importance of slow and steady yeah. and just good fundamentals. And have a good plan, and have a true north, and just kind of work the plan.
Well, and that's great service for the community. You know, thank you for doing that. I mean, because our firm tries to do that, and then several. You know, Atlanta's not big. The investment world's not that big. I know most of the mm-hmm. investment providers here in town, and you know, there are good quality managers. The key thing is to have a good manager who can steer you through the tough decisions of life, the excitement of life, and the uncertainty, going back to that point we were talking about, it's always uncertain in the markets, even
right.
when you don't realize it.
Yeah, and whether you realize it or not, that's the thing. Tomorrow, it could be totally different.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
just the reality of the way we live. There's a lot of chaos.
That's right.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more about CornerCap, what's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
You can go to our website, www.cornercap.com. You can also you can contact our main number, 404-870-0700. And you can ask for me or we can get you information.
All right. Cannon Carr, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thanks, Lee.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.